And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Michelle M. from El Cajon.
Hi, I'm Michelle, alcoholic. Well, I came to this meeting a couple weeks ago and noticed it was a little thin, and I thought, I'm just going to go to this meeting a couple weeks and help beef it up. And here I am. That's what you call beefing it up. So anyway, thank you, and welcome everybody, and especially our new people, and you're very important, and welcome our out-of-towners. I love Hawaii. And anyway, I'll just get going here. The reason I asked Liz to speak is because Liz and I have gone back, way back to our Chula Vista, you know, newcomer days, and I was basically raised at South Bay Pioneer. All these women were always at the table, but we had this meeting in Chula Vista so long ago. Anyway, all these women. So I wanted to just invite the spirits of all these other women that have been before me that have given me wisdom, and now I get to share. And that's a lot of women. So I hope you guys get to hear some really good things. So anyway, I'm just going to go ahead and get into it. I'm the youngest of four girls, and, you know, I had the kind of mom that, you know, would always be with me in sports. I mean, whatever I was doing, she was always there. It was just kind of like having a super nice person to always help you, and she was basically my everything. And then my dad was in the Navy, and he was doing good. And just growing up, you know, I was pretty fast in school, and you know, started to get those medals at Chula Vista High. And you know, I was only 11, but it's just, you could just see it was a lot of fun. And my mom and dad would come and watch. And you know, when you're a kid and you have all that attention and support, it's awesome. It's awesome. And growing up was a blast because of that childhood. And unfortunately, my mom got breast cancer when I was 16, and she passed away. And that basically rocked my world so bad that I said, who am I going to talk to? And, you know, my dad, God love him, you know, what alcoholics do, when they're in pain, and he went right to the bottle. And I said, well, screw this. Uh-oh, better watch it, I'm being recorded. And it was just like I lost an arm or I lost a leg. And if anybody knows what that feels like, then you can understand a loss that deep. So basically, you know, I just went into high school, and I was breaking records in track and doing pretty good. And I mean, track was my everything. It was my first love. And so I was able to get, you know, I was able to do okay still after she passed. But honestly, in my senior year, I was starting to feel the loss. It took time. It just took time. And I was racing this 220 once, and I was winning. And in the middle of the race, my face was like turned from determined to scared, because I was grieving. What can you say? So I just was, when my high school days were over, I was like, that's it. There's no reason to be good anymore. And there's no reason to run. And I knew that I had some scholarships for track. I knew my dad didn't want to do it because he was drinking. And he didn't do the work. My mom always did the work. And so I said, what are we going to do with these track scholarships? And I knew the answer before it came. I knew that. And he said, well, you're just going to go to Southwestern. And if anybody knows that, that's a puny junior college. Sorry if anybody's going there. And so that was the course I took, and I knew that that was going to be that. And so basically I thought, well, that's fine with me. I can just party. And then I worked at Price Club, which is now Costco. And back in the day, when Saul Price owned it, we had parties, and then we said we could drink. And I didn't realize anything, but, you know, blacking out at parties. In the middle of the dance floor, making out with your boss? Okay, come on now. What's going on? And, you know, making headlines. That's what I was doing, making headlines. So the next day they're all, we know you had fun last night. And I was like, it was like half of a blackout, half there. And I lost, basically, I lost that job and two other really good jobs. And I was in Signal Hill. I moved from Chula Vista, go Chula, to L.A., where my drug and alcoholism just expanded like the city. Same thing. And I moved to Signal Hill because they saw me as, quote, a talented representative. Let's just put it that way. And so I was making some really good money, and I basically lost that job and lost these other two warehouse kinds of jobs. And I can't remember the names. My brain was burnt. I just can't remember what they were called. Oh, well, that's what happens. Some of the past just gets into dust, I guess. So, but what happened is, you know, due to the anxiety, and I was making really good money back then. If you made like 12 bucks an hour, that was like high money. And then we made 18 on Sunday because we got time and a half. And so anyway, I'm trying to think. So after losing those three jobs, this was the whirlwind that we are in people's lives. And I was drinking pretty heavy. I was getting into it. I was really smoking an outside substance. It's like a white ball with a glass pipe. And I was smoking that. And you don't eat very much. And I was not interested in sleeping. I mean, what are my both favorite things now? Eating and sleeping. Come on, you guys. You know I'm not the only one. And anyway, so my boyfriend at the time that moved up to Long Beach with me, we said we'd take a 3-week break. Why 3 weeks? Who knows? And it ended up being longer. And of course, I go to the batting cages with dolphin shorts. Oh, let's go back. And this is going to be a flashback to the past. I was wearing dolphin shorts and one of those thin shirts that don't bother wearing anything under. So I met the sickest guy in L.A., of course, and we got together. So when Jim came up, he had this idea. Since I lost all my jobs, I let my car run out of oil, so I had no car. And at the end of that third job, I had to ride my bike through a riverbed to make $5 an hour. Thank you. And then come home. And then I was just so thirsty. I just couldn't wait to get to that refrigerator because I knew what was in there. Tons of Michelob. And I don't know about you guys, but I had a endurance that was, I could drink probably more than anybody in this room. I hate to say it like that. Probably not, because I know we're alike, but my God, talk about what you call, what's that word, tolerance, and it just, you know, I'm not that big, and to say that I wasn't eating, I got down to some pretty skinny, like 97, and yet the tolerance. I didn't know that having a lot of tolerance was a symptom of alcoholism. Nobody told me that. And anyway, so here we go. He goes, you're going to go down to this bar, and you're going to get a job. And we had talked about this job. And we were like, I was like, God, I hope I never have to do that. So it ended up where I had to, because I lost a lot of jobs, a car. And I had this guy that's really sick that I met at the softball thing. And so he winds up doing all my laundry, driving me to work. So I got this job in a bar, of course. Where else am I going to work? I'm going downhill in employment. And it's a topless bar. Okay, everybody have a good time. So I know I'm on record, so what are you going to do? And I was just like scared to death. And there was this line going up to the bar, and all the girls were like standing in line getting a drink. And I was like, oh, boy, do I need one here. And this girl goes, I do too. And that was the, let's just call it, my alcoholism got to mature and grow. And it became explosive. And, you know, we got to drink there. And you know what says in the big book, how Bill arrived and he had all these things going for him and he thought he had it made. Well, that's how I felt. I had it made with $22 in the bank, no car, a job where I could drink. So I thought my past was behind me and I was free. I was like, Bill, move out of the way. And, you know, a budding alcoholic, when you start drinking, what happens? Well, then I'm drunk at work. And, you know I'm not the only blackout, but this is the behavior. I would have some drinks. Mostly we just did pitchers of beer. We didn't have hard alcohol, thank God. But, you know, you can get plenty plastered on that, on the pitchers. And we got away with murder. Guys would just throw money at us. We didn't even have to dance. That's how bitchin' it was in the 80s. Even if you were 70, 97 pound skanky looking girl, you'd still make money. It was bitchin'. One of the best times of my life. But anyway, nobody would have believed this story, and it is real. And who could make this up? So anyway, moving on, they said, well, you can drink. And so I was starting to hammer it, and my alcoholism was saying, you're going to drink, and you're going to drink this hard, and you're going to drink, and I'm going to tell you where you're going to drink and who you're going to go with. And I became a slave. And alcohol was my master, and it took... You know, it only took 2 years for my alcoholism to literally explode, and it took 6 years of smoking that little white ball that I was talking about, that was a progress, and that's why I got so thin and lost all those jobs. And anyway, what happened is I was like in chapter three. I got worse, never better, and I was starting to get really scared. Because here I was working in a bar and getting sent home drunk. I got sent home 4 times because I was drunk. And I remember this one time, all the girls were standing around and we'd have to dance around this one guy whose it was his birthday. You know that. You guys know this. Don't act like I'm the only sick one. Because I know I'm not here. And anyway, this girl, this was in the 80s. So this girl that I was working with had one of those, you know, headbands, the tie-dye. And she's all, get over here. She's like, oh my God, she's looking at me because I'm like, what? What? And I remember blacking out, and I remember coming to, and she's like, "Get over here." And I was just like, "Oh," trying to act cool when I'm just blasted. And then I blacked out again. And I was told by the bartender that I almost dropped a pitcher like on a guy's table, or we stood on these dumb chairs, and I almost like fell off the chair. And that was blacking out. I mean, this was not exactly, so I was being told, "We don't want to see you drinking tonight." And I was thinking, just one night. I can do one night. And that's what I did, one night, because then the heat wasn't on. They forgot about me. And I was like, good. So I went on it hard. And, you know, it just got to be where I would drink and then, you know, not really even get drunk. But that's when they call it stopped working for me. That's what they call that. And I didn't know that for a long time. So I encourage the new people to just sit here and listen to the similarities, because I didn't realize a lot of things. And I just kept going to a lot of meetings because I didn't want to have to come down off that crap. That just was just terrible. And so basically, this went on for 6 months. All this power fun, coming home drunk, having a guy take me to work. And he wasn't exactly nice. That relationship started to become violent and abusive. And I'd have to go to work with bruises. And I have this friend. This is where it got really good. There's a gal that was working in the bar. And she had really long, long, pretty blonde hair down to her butt. And they called her Blondie. But I overheard her say, because I was standing at the bar, and I overheard her say, "I have 30 days of sobriety." And, you know, when you're scared and you don't have any more answers, that sounds like it's interesting. And I just knew I had to at least go over there because I was out of answers. I was trying to stop on my own. Oh, I'll just run track. And 4 days later, drunk. Humiliated. I have had bad situations with guys that were pretty embarrassing. And yet, it says in the book, that was the only life I knew. And that the disease would make me forget about how bad it was. It'd make me forget. And 4 days later, I just couldn't go on. That was the longest my will could not drink. And then by the time that fourth day came, I was like, I will move a bus to get this beer, so everybody better move. And that's not exactly, that's a disease. That's a disease telling me exactly what I'm going to do. So she said, "I have 30 days of sobriety," and I was just staring at her, you know. I said, "So, Blondie," I came over there. I said, "So how do you feel?" And I was staring at her. And she goes, "I feel really, really good." And I was thinking, that sucks. Because I wanted her to say, "Oh, yeah, I feel awful. Don't stop drinking. Sobriety is no good." I wanted her to say that. And then when she said, "I feel really, really good," that was the attraction. Not promotion. I had no idea that was tradition 11. So she became the walking big book. And there's a walking big book in your life, and you could be the walking big book in someone else's. Because I couldn't believe she could work and not drink and not want to drink. And she was totally free. And I was just staring, watching her work. And, you know, that becomes extremely attractive when someone's doing that and you don't know how they do it. So, I mean, you don't know if you're a walking big book to somebody at work that could be staring at you and going, "How is he doing that?" And trust me, 9 out of 10 times you are, and you don't know it. She didn't know I was staring at her. So anyway, I got worse, never better. And One day, after being sent and being, I mean, I felt like I was being beat up because alcohol, it just, it hurts. Always hungover, thirsty, beat up, bruises. I'd wake up with a silver dollar bruise and go, where did that come from? And my boyfriend would go, oh, that's when you tried to be Wonder Woman and jump over the stove last night. I mean, it just got from bad to worse. I never knew what I was going to do, and it was always really harmful. And so I just went up to her one day, and I said, well, I guess I'll go to a meeting with you. And she goes, okay. She never said, yeah, you need it. Because if anybody would have said that, like my boyfriend, I will never say that to a drinker, ever. Because ex-problem drinkers don't put up with it, and nobody wants to hear it. It's already hard enough not being able to stop drinking. So I just allow that person, and I'll be the example. And they watch our actions far more than listening. They watch our actions. And I was watching hers. And so anyway, I went to AA with her, and I got 18 days of sobriety. And the seeds were sinking in. And this was in Long Beach. I got sober in Seal Beach. And there was this cool Alano Club that used to be a bar, of course. And now it's an Alano Club, and it's called We're Happy, Happy Hour Never Ends, or something like that. But it was an AA club. It was really cool. All kinds of meetings, step studies, you name it. Really strong sobriety. And so I had 18 days. I hope I can do this okay. But I had at 18 days, and this thought came, well, maybe I can get 30 days in 20. Have you ever heard such a thing? I mean, science hasn't done that yet. How am I supposed to do it? But delusional thinking. Just, I thought, well, why not? Maybe I can. And sure enough, I had 20 days, and I went back, and I smoked that white ball and blew my sobriety of 20 days. You know, I worked for that 20 days. And I came back like a month later. I smoked four times, and I didn't drink. Because the seeds of AA, sick as it sounds, the seeds of AA had already been planted really hard. And so I'm sitting with one of these boyfriends, but God knows who. And I said, oh, we don't drink. Okay, you smoke crack, but you don't drink. That's nice. Last I heard, half measures availed us nothing. So I came back, and I remember the day. I remember that day. It was a Saturday, and I was in my little apartment, and we had brown carpet. And I said to myself, I'm going to try again. And I came back, and I just took it a day at a time. And I knew I couldn't do next week today, and I couldn't do next month today. But it showed me that I didn't have any excuses to drink, that there was never going to be a reason good enough. Even my mother's death was not going to be a reason to drink. And that's what I learned. And there it was, you know, my friend got sober, and I got sober, and the bartender got sober, and she became a cop. And I was thinking, what am I going to be? That's the most treacherous question you could ask yourself when you're 24 and, you know, no family around and skinny, not feeling like you're really on the odds in a topless bar. What am I going to be? And I'm really proud that, you know, the steps and a lot of strong sponsorship and the steps I've had to work a lot. You know, some of us are sicker than others, and I had no mother. You know, I got sober at 25, and by the grace of this, there has to be, as you've heard my story, you know damn well there's a higher power, because I have 30 years of sobriety. Yes. So, yes, that's the living proof. You can just look at all of us. I don't think we'd be here sitting on a Saturday night just to have our jollies. So, anyway, you know, I've had such great sponsorship. I have to tell my friends that my sponsor Nancy's here, and I've had such good sponsorship. I really think that that is such a key component. And I have had the privilege to sponsor and give what those women gave to me. It was priceless. And they guarded this program with their lives. With their lives. And they were dead serious about staying sober, but they sure knew how to laugh. And that I was thinking, what is so good here? Why are they so serious? How can they sit in the same chair every week? What's over here? Well, I knew what was out there, getting beat up. I said, I don't want that. But, you know, we're curious by nature. Alcoholics are curious by nature. So I was like, I'm going to find out what it is. And they showed me with all the love and their tolerance and just the grace that they carried. And I know I still remember Althea, and she was my Chula Vista sponsor, and then her sponsor was Joyce, and we all sat at that table in the Chula Vista meeting behind St. Pius, where I went to Catholic school, and that meeting, that's when we could smoke, and I liked it, even though, yeah, I did smoke up to 2 years sober, and I was like, so what? Make it smoky. And all the girls were going, oh, my God, I have to put my coat outside and hang it up because it stinks. And I was like, so, you know. Look what we were getting. I was thinking, look what we're getting. You care about smoke? But the women were just so beautiful. And anyway, then Althea couldn't be my sponsor, because she had to be a mom again. Her son, Bill, was married to Janet, and Janet had a restraining order against this boyfriend that was bad news. And the boyfriend got in the house and stabbed Janet. And she fought back, and she passed away. And I saw this on the TV. The guy ran out, and he was bleeding all the way to a dumpster, and he went in the dumpster. And so I wasn't inconvenienced, but I couldn't have Althea as a sponsor anymore. She was like, she had to become a mom for two grandkids, and that was a blow. And of course it was from drugs and alcohol, and that just blew us all away, really. Then of course I love Althea, and my friend Harry and I talk about her all the time. And some people you just don't stop missing. She went to the big meeting, oh, when I turned like 11 years sober. And then she went to the big meeting, and she passed away. Then Corinne came at 10 years of sobriety, and she had 50 years of sobriety, and everybody just ran to her. And I don't know. There are some people that just ooze love. They just ooze it. And we'd go to the Old Town Speaker, and Mike knows all about that. And anyway, it was fun. If you get a chance to go to meetings, go with your sponsor. It really enriches. It just makes your sobriety deeper. There's something about walking, going around to a meeting with a walking big book. You're not going to stay the same. So anyway, beautiful woman. When she passed, it's like we all had this meeting around the bed. So what time do I have till? Okay. So we were all, Corinne was 50 years sober. She had this huge, huge anniversary party. And all these people from out of the state came. And there was a bunch of people. And Mike was there. And everybody that was close to her got to speak. And you don't see people very often with 50 years of sobriety. So about 3 months after that, she passed. We were all in the hospital room around her bed. There was about 7 of us. And she goes, "I want to have a meeting." I said, "Okay, let's have a meeting." So we started to talk about Corinne and what she had done. And I was last. And I just felt like I got some wisdom after hearing everybody. And I said, you're going home. And I thought a lot of it was like the Wizard of Oz, you know, Dorothy and all around us were all the people that went down that journey. She said, "Who am I?" And I said, "You're Dorothy, and you're going home." And there was just like, wow. That came from a higher power, that wisdom. And we got to say goodbye the best way. And then she went to the big meeting. And 10 months after that, the guy that I was seeing broke up. And I didn't realize, I got out of dancing, but I didn't realize that I need endorphins. I have to have endorphins. And some people are like that, but that's how I am too. And anyway, I just wasn't doing as well. And of course, grieving and everything. He left, and of course, I was devastated when my sponsor, I got young, after, because I couldn't take all these hits with people leaving. So I got my friend Diane, who was my sister's cheerleading friend in high school, and she got sober really young. And anyway, I was with her. We had history, and I worked with her for a while, but it was hard. Everybody at that meeting was lost. We're all lost, and didn't know how to act. So the guy broke up. Little did I know I was being saved. Don't you hate that? When you think, "Oh no, don't do that," and little do you know that you're being helped. And I wish I would have known that instead of wasting all that energy. But, you know, we're friends. And I had to do a lot of praying because I wasn't good. I was not good. And I really have to share this because I did, I got really mad after the two of them passed away. And I was angry. And I'm like, "You know what? Is this your plan? Because I have some serious issues with you, God. It's a good thing you're invisible." I was serious. I figured out why he was invisible. Because I would have killed him. I'm not joking. I was so mad. And then I started thinking about all these ancient memories back with, you know, Hail Mary and all these thoughts. I'm like, "Stop." So at 13 years of sobriety, that's what I figured that out. I was like, "No wonder you're invisible." And anyway, that I was just selling cars at Toyota of El Cajon. And thank God, you know, I was good at doing things. I got a lot of talent from my mom. She taught swimming in our backyard. And everybody just loved her. And I'd watch her and talk to people. And that's how I learned. Kids watch their parents. And I look just like my mom, and I'm really glad. Not that my dad's not good looking, but I'm glad I look like her. So that really didn't come out right. But anyway, so, you know, the good news is, I was working at Toyota of El Cajon, and I made enough money. I got to buy a condo with no money down. Ha-ha. And that's the day when you could do that. And, of course, it was the worst time in America to purchase. And I did. So, but it's turned out to serve its purpose. And I have to add this because Nancy has been my sponsor now for 17 years. And I've pushed her a little bit, too. And Althea goes, Michelle, you just push people. You just like to push them. And I do. And I'm not nearly as bad, but I was drinking Red Bull and I was just turning into a biatch. And you don't do that. Yes. You don't do that when you're trying to sell cars and you're around managers and you go up here and then down like the Red Baron. I mean, not slow, down. And, you know, I got to give Nancy a cake. And that was a big honor because Paul always gave her cakes. And everyone's like, oh, I get to give Nancy a cake. And so I had my turn. And she had been my sponsor for 6 years at this time. And this is why it's funny, I have to share. Because after, you know, going up and down and being a biatch and talking like some things to my sponsor that weren't kosher. She hung up on me once, and she needed to because I was just like, I can't believe you were talking like that to myself. I mean, I couldn't control my emotional nature. God bless you if you can drink Red Bull, but I don't. I can't, and good for you if you can. So I've given that up. I had to surrender 5 different addictions, and that was very painful. And anyway, I gave her this cake, and I was thinking, I hope she doesn't say anything about my bitchiness. And I give her the cake and the token, and as soon as she gets the token, she goes, it's been interesting. Uh-huh, I knew it. I knew something was going to come out. And I was like, oh, God, don't say anything. But she didn't need to say anything more because that could have gone either way, and nobody really knew what way it went, which is good. But thank God, you know, thank God, my sponsor. I love all my sponsors and Nancy. I'm grateful that she takes care of herself. And you know, Corinne smoked and she quit for 3 years and she decided she wanted to smoke. And then she asked the doctor, "How long do you think I'll last if I smoke?" And he goes, about a year and a half. And she was gone about a month. And that was her choice. And we couldn't blame her. We couldn't say fault. There's no fault in someone's choices. We still love her. And she got to do what she needed to do here. And we still all just love her. So basically, I went from selling Toyotas and got best sales and got the condo and started to win some trips, and it was going pretty good, but I just never had any time to even meet a doorknob because you're always working. It doesn't matter what time it is, you're going to work. So anyway, I just decided to quit the car business, and I had fallen in love with, okay, I had fallen in love with selling homes, and I wanted to do that 6 years. 6 years before I could sell one home. I was just yearning. That's a long time before you get to actually do it. And it's hard to get out of the car business. And I was doing some caregiving to put some supplemental income, and I did pretty good for first few years, but I just wanted to go a little further here. Like 2.5 years ago, my sister she's 3 years older and she has this big house in Carlsbad, and her husband cheated on her, and she just didn't have the tools. She had no idea how to work AA principles, and I ended up going up there living with her, and she was just going down slow. And thank God I got to be there. It was hard, you guys. When you take care of somebody, you know, it's twice as stressful. Twice. And then the family dynamics inside of that was hard. I never wish that on anybody. But the good news is, even though I had to just ramp up my program and go to, I went to like a meeting every day for 4 months, I had to write an inventory. I had to go to Al-Anon, and I just had to really press all the tools and hard because of the stress. And it worked. I can honestly say it took care of the stress. And I had to do a lot of action. And, you know, I would have never believed that my sister, that we hated each other when growing up, and even when I got to the house that was bad, we ended up being just the best of friends. And that's because I got to give her AA. I did. And I would have never, ever thought in a million years that was going to happen. Never. And we got to just be the best of friends. And she passed away almost 3 years ago. And my family was devastated, but we did step up to the plate. And I think from that experience, I've just been stretched so far and every way spiritually, because you guys and my higher power walked me through it. It was so difficult. And I never wished that on anybody. And basically, she had colon cancer. But thank God she wasn't in any pain. And we know why, because that was God helping her. So I've just been, actually, I had to really get back to selling real estate, and I was so cold because I hardly worked. I was basically struggling for a while, and I'm just now getting on my feet. And I just feel like, I don't know why, I just feel better. And I had no idea that after my sister passed, I'd feel like such joy, because I had such joy taking care of her. It was that intense service that we talk about in AA when we, you know, we help other drunks intensely. Well, I was intensely being of service and forgot all about me. And I was so full of joy, you know, after she passed, I knew who was doing that. He was happy because I was doing all that service work. So I just know that that's how we do it. That's how things work here. Far, far different than we could ever imagine. So I took this niche. Okay, perfect. I took this niche in divorce real estate because I wanted to maybe, I'd like to honor my sister. She had a divorce and went through agony, and I could serve other couples because they're highly underserved. So I got a certification, and now I'm going to be able to help couples, unfortunately, that have to get a divorce, but at least I can be there and help them with their division assets. But I'd like to make a difference and help the communities and just be of the best service that I can possibly be. And here we are. And so I'm really grateful that you guys were here to listen. I'm going to keep coming back. Thanks.